is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. It's another Monday. I've got an excellent guest tonight. Her name is Nicole Didon, and she is the founder of One Taste. You may or may not have heard of this organization. I actually spent quite a bit of time there myself teaching classes from about 2007 until 2008. It used to be a residential program. It's now mostly converting to an online presence, and there's a brand new book. Nicole is the author of it. It's called Slow Sex. And from what I can tell, it's doing very well on Amazon, getting off to a really nice start. Nicole, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, it's great to be talking to you again.
It is. It's really nice.
And I'm thinking a lot of my listeners may not know a lot about the slow sex movement, which apparently you've been leading since 1999. Can you give us a definition of slow sex and tell us a little bit about what that has to do with orgasmic meditation, or I guess for short, that's called oming?
Sure. So I can sort of point to it. It's kind of hard because it's not actually out there yet, so I can give you some ideas. So there's, you know, sort of there's sex as we know it, or sex as I had known it, maybe is a better way to say it. And I had known it kind of like, I basically thought I had a great sex life, and I knew it kind of like fitness, you know, like harder and faster, and I think of it like aerobics almost. And then if you think of it as like all of a sudden yoga walked in the door in the 80s, right? And it was like this totally new thing, and it was like a different dimension of what was available. That's how I think of slow sex. It's sort of like the other side of sex as we know it.
And this is based more on female sexuality than male sexuality. Is that true?
Well, I think it definitely starts there. And then, although, you know, for me, I don't really necessarily differentiate so much, but I think if you look at our culture and you look at our conditioning, for the most part, now this is just in terms of conditioning, women are conditioned to be closed sexually and men are conditioned to be closed emotionally. And so what we try to do is, you know, bend that piece of paper all the way back so that we can get, you know, back to a common ground and begin to you know, to really open these areas up.
Well, I've often thought that we've really moved into what I would call a pornographic culture, which
right.
seems to be all about women trying to speed themselves up and meet male sexual desire and male sexual response. What do you think about that?
I think you said that brilliantly. Brilliant. I like that speed up and meet male response. That's great. You know, Freud said what isn't integrated is exaggerated, and I think that's what's happening with our sexuality. It's not integrated. And so you see these, you know, toxic mimics, these horribly exaggerated forms of sexuality basically to compensate for the fact that most of us can't feel.
Yes, exactly. And what I'm seeing in my office, I have an office in Nevada City, and I see both men and women and couples there, but I get a lot of women who are not orgasmic. They're not experiencing
right.
orgasms. They are, however, engaging in all kinds of advanced forms of sex, including anal sex on the very first date.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, they're basically frigid, but acting like porn stars.
I'm so, so happy you said that. And then, because that's what I say to people is like, oh my gosh, what, like the things that you're exploring are advanced for me. You know, like they're really, really intense things that people start with, rather than just going down to like the most basic element of learning to feel their partner.
And how does one start that? Do you have to start with like conscious breathing class or a yoga class, or where does one begin? If for the listeners who are out there right now and saying, okay, yeah, we've been copying everything in the pornos and we're miserable, then what's
right.
the next step for them?
Yeah. It's funny. I was just talking to somebody about the fact that porn is our sex education right now, which is,
oh, it's,
you know,
so sad.
Yeah.
It's so sad. As a sexologist, I feel like that it's, I'm trying to re-educate people.
Right, yeah. And I do think it's some kind of, I think it takes a lot of peeling back. We're so accustomed to piling stuff on. It's like, I can't feel, so I'll pile on, you know, a new position or a new toy or a new something, rather than taking all of that stuff off and just getting back to basic feeling. So I think, you know, usually that's my first suggestion, is like actually just like take some of the stuff off and be with your partner and see what's there. You know, and that's, and so when you asked earlier about orgasmic meditation, for me that's I don't know, it just happened to travel at the speed that my body as a woman travels. So, you know, that's why I like how you said, speeding up to a man's pace. Like my body actually moves really slowly and with light pressure, and that's how it opens. And that's the idea behind orgasmic meditation, is it's a very, very light stroke, deliberate, with a great deal of attention, so that I can slow down and focus in that region that has so much charge and stuff that comes with it.
Well, you've actually got quite a program lined up here. You've got something called the 10-Day Starter Program.
Right, yeah.
So, and you claim that with just 15 minutes a day, you can turn your sex life around.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, and I kind of, it's funny, I always kind of worry about statements like that, like, just 15 minutes a day, but it's funny because I've... But it's true. Like, it really, like, you know, I'm doing the same thing. I did 90 days of yoga in a row, and, like, my whole life is different. I think when you agree to take on a practice and for a period of time, things, like, organically begin to change. You don't have to effort. You just have to do the practice, and things begin to align accordingly. And that's been my experience again. And, you know, we've had several thousand people come through the doors of WinTaste, and it's like, again and again and again, if a woman can actually get to the place where she's willing to take on a practice for a period of time, it changes her drastically, because she begins to be nourished in that area where she's, like, where hunger actually comes from, she begins to be nourished.
Hmm. Wow, so is this a new diet?
Yeah.
It's an orgasmic diet.
It's the diet. Yeah, for me, I mean, that's what it is. It's like, that. When I tell my story, it's that, you know, whatever, my dad died, and I had this moment of this realization, and it was that, like, I had been, oh my gosh, I had been overachieving and, you know, working really hard, and I had been shopping and drinking good wine, and I had the right partner. I had, you know, I had been trying to feed this hunger, and none of it had actually worked, and I think it took that realization for me to be willing to see that it might be orgasm. You know, I don't want it to be anything but orgasm, quite frankly. Like, I want it to be like Zen Buddhism or something. You know,
right.
It happened to be that the thing my body, like, it was just dying for was pure, that, and not climax, but pure, deep, nourishing orgasm.
And if you know, Deb, can you weigh in on the controversy, which seems to still be going, about clitoral versus vaginal orgasms? Do you think there is a difference, or is there an internal orgasm and an external orgasm?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I think there's the front of the clit, and then there's the back of the clit, and then it's all the clit.
Yeah.
And that you touch it from different angles, and I do think every orgasm is different, but I don't think there's like a But that's my experience. You know, that's my body, and I don't know other women's bodies in that way.
Well, there's also the G spot and the A spot, and they're way up inside. So, but I don't know if every woman experienced those different spots as producing a different orgasm. Does female ejaculation come into this?
No.
No.
No, this is actually very, it's very gentle. It's very, it's gentle and it's deep. So I don't, you know, I come, my background really is in sitting meditation. And, you know, I had this experience of, you know, just focusing on the breath and like, wow, you focus on the breath and you can get it to some pretty cool places was my experience. And then I was teaching, and I was teaching these women in sexual identities and communication, and every single one of them felt wrong about their sexuality. And I wished at the time that I had some kind of solution for them. And so I thought, oh, well, you know, if the breath works to get you there, something has to work in the arena of sexuality to get you in really deep. And so I spent, you know, however many years, 15 years or something, looking for what that thing was that could bring you deep rather than like big or explosive or, you know, and I love big explosive sex, but this isn't that. This is just something to really bring you inside of your own orgasm, inside your own body.
Well, and you actually detail 5 unmistakable signs of a woman in orgasm.
Right.
And apparently, so this kind of suggests that some of us might not recognize a woman who's having an orgasm. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Oh, I think, you know, I think we're a goal addicted society. You know, it's like it was just so funny. It's like playing for the last note of a song, right? You know, it's like,
right.
And you don't listen to the whole song. You just that one last note where the playing comes. And I think that kind of...
That's a good analogy. It really is. And it frustrates me to no end because when I'm working with my clients a lot of times, they just want to get to that orgasm. They want to know, how do you fix my sex life? And it's like, my God, it's such a complex issue. You know, it's connected to so many things.
Yeah, it's the whole ecology, right?
Yes,
getting
yes.
in there.
Right, but sometimes I start my workshops by saying, you're not a machine, and I'm not going to show you where the magic button is.
Yep, that's what I say in the book when I talk about, like, most men look at it like a television, you know, like they're trying to turn the knob.
Right.
And if they can't get reception, they just keep trying to turn the knob, and it's like, it's not working.
Yeah. This thing needs new batteries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so I think this climax has kind of taken hostage the whole of orgasm. And I think, you know, there's the whole rest of the song. And my experience in workshops, which is my guess is similar to yours, when people come and say, you know, I want to heal my sex life. And then the same mind that wants to rush for the orgasm is the mind that doesn't enjoy sex.
Oh,
it's like
this
quick fix mind. It's like, I'm starving. Feed me, anything now. And it's like this panic is in the body that can't slow down to the place where it will actually get fed.
Oh, absolutely. I've often, and male sexuality impresses me as being especially tinged with that, where a lot of men are pursuing sex, pursuing an orgasm, but not really enjoying sex.
Right. Yeah. This is. I did an interview with these guys who were great, and they were like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. I think, you know, I want the orgasm. I want the orgasm. And I said to them, I don't think it's just the orgasm. If I gave you, you know, as many of the hottest women that you could possibly desire, and each one of them gave you an orgasm, there would still be an empty feeling if that's all you got. Like, that's not where the nourishment happens.
So where does the nourishment happen?
Well, I'm sorry, and back there I say the climax. I think it happens in the entire experience. Mm. I think it happens, you know, and I don't want to sound like woo-woo or new-agey, but it does actually happen with this stroke right now. And when you can feel this stroke and then feel the next stroke and the next stroke and the next stroke, you actually begin building a whole world. You actually begin building your whole orgasm. And rather than having the kind of sex life that's depleting, right? So I think most of the time we get this build up and then we, you know, like we feel turned on and we feel stressed out and we want to get that sensation out of our bodies rather than learning how to build sensation in our bodies.
So it says it's a more integrated approach.
Right.
Yeah. More connected to yourself even, perhaps.
Right.
How does this work for men? Is oming just for women? Is it for men and women? Is it for couples? How does that work?
Well, I think, you know, it's for couples, definitely. And then, and you know, there are women-women pairings and, you know, there's all different forms
right.
of the pairing. And we, like I said earlier, we definitely start with the focus on female orgasm. My experience is that most women, you know, when I talk to them privately, have some sense of obligation around sex. And that sense of obligation, again, has taken hostage pleasure. It's like they can't sink in. They're just, you know, it's like another thing on their to-do list. So my first work is to have women begin to experience pleasure. And then that changes the whole of sex at that point. And then, you know, like, for example, I practiced for a pretty good period of time just being stroked, years and years. And then when I, you know, introduced intercourse or oral sex, like, it was a totally different world. Like, it's so different when you enjoy it. And so, you know, a lot of these guys are, you know, they're like, well, I'm not so sure. What am I going to get out of this? And then they actually can feel what it's like when she's genuinely turned on versus simply doing something to please him.
So you abstained from sexual intercourse for an extensive period of time?
Yeah, I did.
Was this a conscious decision, or did this just kind of sort out as part of your path?
I think it was, I had a deeper feeling that it was the thing to do in order to begin to feel. I mean, I think I was so fortunate. I had this experience the first time I had, you know, someone stroked me. I had orgasmic meditation. Like, I had this experience that was unlike anything I had ever felt before. Like, it was like my brain is usually a traffic jam, and there was not a single spot. And I was just completely immersed. And in that moment, I thought, oh, my God, this is what it's supposed to be like. And so I spent the next several years, just practicing, you know, going into really deep practice in order to be able to stay in that state sustainably rather than just having flashes of it at the moment of climax. See, to me, I think climax is the advertisement for where you can live. And I wanted to know how to live there. So I just practiced and practiced and practiced. And for me, intercourse is one of those very elaborate experiences that I wasn't, you know, I would check out. And so it took a long time for me to be able to stay really in my body long enough to then have intercourse. And then when I finally had intercourse, my God, you know, I had been practicing for so long and I had had so much, you know, blood go to my genitals that it was like prior to oming, it was like I just felt kind of like hard inside, like he would bang against me. And then after, it was like a velvet glove, like everything just folded around him. And again, intercourse changed exponentially. It was not the same experience.
Wow. That's really amazing, and I think that's also sometimes a little bit surprising for people who would think that a sex educator, a sex positive person, might actually use some types of abstaining in order to ramp up or accentuate, or even perhaps, I don't know if this word fits for you, but rebirth your sexual response.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I might even use the word purify. You know, it was like I had so many old ideas and so many old ways of being around my sexuality. It felt so good to take those off and then discover again anew, you know, like who I was and how to feel. And, you know, it was like, oh, my God. Yeah.
Yes. Do you think women's bodies are, like, we've really misunderstood them to the point where, and this is really shocking here, and I just read this as material that came with your book, that the DSM, the Diagnostics Statistics Manual, the fourth version that's going to be coming out in 2013, is actually going to list low sexual interest in women as a disorder that's... in need of treating. I don't know if they're actually going to have a modality for treating it, but...
They're going to have the new female Viagra.
That's it. I should have known Big Pharma was attached to this.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And I guess about 40 million American couples are dissatisfied with their sex life.
And you know, it's funny. We have it in the realm of medicine, but I don't think it's medical. I think it's cultural, the issue. You know, and again, I don't think it's going to be a quick fix. I don't think it's going to be that you pop a pill. I think it's going to be a slow remedy. And it's actually and see, the thing is that we're all so hungry and we want to hurry up and get it fixed. But you know, you'll see people popping the pill and doing all of these things. And then it'll be like every other magical diet that happens, right? And you know, it's like every single time the doctors come back and say, well, you know, actually, you know, dieting is fairly simple. You take in less calories than you spend. You know, it's like eat well and exercise. It's very simple. But we so desperately want there to be a shortcut. And the same thing's true around sex.
Yeah.
We want there to be some way that we can have sex without actually feeling each other.
That's the key, I think, right there, is that people are really trying to avoid connection and compassion and really, you know, being energetically connected with each other.
Right.
There's this total avoidance pattern. It's like, I just want the sensation.
Yes. And I want the sensation. The other funny part is I want the sensation of being out of control without having to surrender.
Right. As if that would work.
Yeah, but I think, it's funny, it's the thing that we most desperately want is that place of not being in control.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and it is a difficult thing for a lot of people to really let go. What is the thing that women are really hungering for? The surprising thing that women are really hungry for. What is that?
I think it is that pure saturation of orgasm, and I don't quite know how to say this, but it's like the pure orgasm that, like how you just said, that place of compassion and connection. And but all of that is included, but that doesn't sound flashy enough, right? It's not like high-powered, super, mega, porn kitty sex. And so it's funny, like when women get strokes, there's, you know, some, like, they'll start crying or there'll be, like, really intense experience for them and they'll be, why does that tiny little stroke work so much? And it's basically because that much attention is a very, very powerful thing. Mm. And we so underestimate the power of our attention.
Yeah. So it's everything else, it seems, like, you know, the food or the television or shopping is really an avoidance pattern.
Yeah. And isn't it crazy that it's an avoidance pattern for the thing we want?
Yes, it's insane. nothing short of insanity.
No.
So what's clitoral mapping?
So what, you know, I'm basically like, I don't know, like my partner's really into tech and I'm that version. I'm like an orgasm geek. So I spent, and I whatever, like nobody ever has to do this. I want to say that, like, you can just have your 15 minutes a day practice. But what I did was I basically lived like an orgasm monk. Like I lived, you know, in the backwoods and just practiced for hours and hours a day and just wanted to know every single thing about orgasm that I possibly could. And, you know, and I had a partner and we began to notice that certain locations on the clitoris create, like, all of a sudden this tiny little clitoris became like a huge orb and along with it different sensations were associated with it. So there's, we found, and then we began to research it with, you know, all of these students, like, if you stroke deep in the back of the pocket, you get this rich, earthy, grounded feeling. There's a spot along the ridge of the clitoris where if you stroke right there, it tends to spread out and, you know, reach up into the chest, and it feels a lot like love. If you stroke, you know, if you do like a quick stroke at the very, very tip of the clitoris, it tends to draw your clitoris out and have this reverent feeling. And, you know, I've applied the different words, but there are different sensations that people report again and again and again and again. And we actually are just going into research now. You know, like, we're bringing it to the scientists to explore. But that's the basic idea. So we've created these audio ohms that you can do where we describe, you know, we call it like I call it like a Whitman sampler. Remember those candy
boxes? Yes, exactly.
So it's like a Whitman sampler of different strokes. So you can, so a woman, because one of the things that happens is women come in and they have no idea how to communicate to their partner what they like.
Mm.
So we've created, you know, we guide the stroker, you know, how to do these different types of strokes. And then the woman who's lying back can say, oh, I really like that one. Or, no, I can't quite tune in with that one right now. And so she can begin to put together a whole list of strokes that she likes, and that can begin to open her orgasm, you know, in a really organic way according to what she likes. And it also has her stroker feel smart and confident rather than just kind of like fumbling through trying to figure it out.
Right, right. You know, you've actually got some things towards the back of the book here about what women should know about men and what men should know about women. About women.
Uh-huh.
And I, in particular, what's jumping out for me, it was what women should know about men, number 8 on page 176, when you hit, it hurts.
Right. Yeah.
Why is it that we're having to have that explicitly stated for us? Are women making the assumption that they can abuse men with impunity?
Yes. I think we've so bought into, many women, you know, and this isn't all women, obviously, I think we've so bought into the idea that, you know, the patriarchy and the man and men have the power, and that we've taken on this identity where we can, you know, criticize a lot. And, you know, sometimes we try to do it under the radar, and he still feels it. You know, we had one of the things we do in a course when we teach, men and women together, is we have the men begin to communicate whenever they feel hurt.
Mm.
And women are shocked, like, because, you know, the male conditioning is to be more stoic, they don't always say, ouch. They just take it in, and so when they actually get the opportunity to say, like, oh, that hurt, then it's actually really also empowering for women to see, wait a minute, I do have an effect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we need to take responsibility.
Right.
For our actions, yeah. There's also number 9 on page 178, men get confused when women withhold information. Seems like a really common pattern of, you know, for a woman to say, if you don't know what's wrong, I'm not going to tell you.
Right. Yeah.
Why do you think women do that to men, first of all, and then let's talk about how they can stop. But
I think we have these complementary patterns, and that are, you know, again, it's conditioning around. I think as women, we have this learned helplessness around our desire, and so we have placed the power outside of ourselves. You know, and then we get really frustrated, like, oh, they're taking my power. Well, no, you just place the power outside of yourself. If you want it, you just say what you want. But saying what you want is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It takes a tremendous responsibility, because if you actually really want to say what you want, you also have to guarantee the best of your ability that the people around you will win in giving it to you.
You know, an interesting piece of research came out of Canada last year, too. Meredith Chivers, you probably heard about her research because it was all over Oprah, but she found out that the number one sexual fantasy that women seem to share in common, at least women from 30 on up, was that of a man taking control and taking the woman, kind of sweeping her off her feet, but that it has to be the right man, doing
right.
it at the right time, in the right way. And really, essentially, that number one sexual fantasy involves a great deal of mind reading and fortune-telling on the part of the man, where he's just supposed to be able to figure out how she wants him to sweep her off her feet and take charge. So there's a real abdication of showing up to express one's desires and be explicit about those. And I can't help but think that that doesn't also play into this whole thing about refusing to explain things to men. And if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you.
And the funny thing is that, how do I explain it? It's like the very thing that actually, so we want him to sweep us off the feet, off our feet, but that is an empty calorie desire, you know, like you know, like an empty calorie where you keep eating and you never get satisfied. The thing that actually begins to satisfy, that actually begins to give us nourishment, is when we say what we want, and then he can actually give it to us. Like, that's where it starts to feel good, because otherwise you're going to take and take and take and never feel satisfied.
Oh, that's a really astute observation. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, that whole thing of wanting to have your mind read. Yeah. Empty calories. Well put.
Thank you. Very well put.
Yeah. Empty calories. So slow sex, is that like chewing every bite of food?
That's a good way of putting it. Well, it's funny, you know, I love... The way slow sex came about was I was talking to the New York Times reporter, and she was asking me to describe what I was talking about because she had no idea. I didn't have any idea how to explain it. And I said, well, you know, it's sort of like slow food. And the idea is really more than being slow. It's not like slow. It's,
right.
It's moving at the tempo that your life is actually moving at. It moves quickly. Sometimes it moves slowly, but when you move at the tempo that your life moves at, it's sustainable. Because you aren't constantly going against what your body wants to do in order to achieve some idea of how it should look.
Wow. Right. So, I'm wondering in the, on page 172, you also say that say it to a man every time, like the first time.
Right.
What does that mean? Like, you should, like a virgin? Is that what we're talking about here? Or?
Well, I think it's, so one of the things that happens is that in our orgasm, in our sex, as women, we're kind of hungry, right? So we get to the point where we have sex. And then we're trying to tell him what to do. And then by the time we finally tell him to do, which is probably about 10 hours after we thought it, we're a little irritated. And then when we communicate, like, no, just move to the left. he's trying to please us, but he's kind of fumbling and feeling stupid. Mm-hmm. And so it's a suggestion to go back and, like, take off all of the frustration, even if he doesn't get it perfectly right the first time. The way to actually set somebody up to give you what you want is to say it every time like it's the first time. Not like, I've said this 300 times, you dummy. It's like, oh no, you're trying to give me what I want. I can afford to be generous here. I can afford to just calmly say it.
Right.
And then women are amazed. They're just amazed when they take those layers off. Like, all of a sudden, the guy gets shockingly smart and capable.
Okay. So you say here, every request a new request, no condescension, no judgment, just a willingness to start over again in every moment.
Right.
That sounds like a spiritual practice.
Yes. We sneak in some stuff every now and then, I think. Yeah.
Oh. Now, I wonder, you know, the subtitle is The Art and Craft of the Female Orgasm. And as we were talking about, it could definitely be for, lesbian connections. But what about gay men? Is there something in your book, Slow Sex, for the gay male?
Yeah, I think, well, there's a couple things. So the first thing is just basically the whole ethos of slow sex. It can translate, I mean, not only can it translate to men, but it can translate into every dimension of your life. Like, I take all of the same principles that I use in slow sex, I use in my business, you know, I use in how I, you know, just how I approach work. Rather than approaching it like work, I'm driven by desire. I have a desire-based business. So they're all...
Okay, now wait just a second there. You have a desire-based business.
Right.
Some people are going to think that means that you're having sex all day long at your desk. So can you explain that? Are you saying that you don't actually do certain functions or tasks unless you're feeling passionate about them? Or what are you actually saying?
Yeah. I don't do anything I don't want to do, actually, is what it boils down to. And it's a much slower process in many ways. Like, you know, I don't know that... We definitely could have made a lot more money a lot faster because we have a lot of excellent content. And I'm living by something deeper. And so then what ended up happening was we are ending up with the same results. You know, like we've been blessed with things that we shouldn't have been blessed with by any, you know, logical standards in terms of, like, the media we've gotten or any of the stuff that we've gotten, and you know, we've just exploded. And I think we exploded because every single part of this business, it's holographic. Every single part of the business is true to the basic principles that are in that book. And so that place where you want to just hurry up and rush for the goal of success, you know, the climax of success, we didn't do that. We have just enjoyed we even closed for 2 months. We weren't enjoying doing the business. So we just closed for 2 months and we just had classes for, you know, for people, for the core group of people. We just kind of got together and really worked on the material and got refreshed and then went and then opened the doors again.
Wow. Wow. So you really do practice what you preach, not just in the bedroom, but in the boardroom as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. So, and I also just want to say that in the back of the book, in the appendix, and I think a few others, we have slow oral for the pleasure of the person giving oral, and we also have male stroking. So all of it can be carried over into male stroking. And that's actually in the book. So it can be...
Now, this is kind of new, isn't it? I mean, I don't remember One Taste having stroking for men.
Well, you know, it's it's always been kind of behind the curtain. I mean, I love stroking men, but I only love it because I got so full that it was like it began to pour out of me, and it was like if I got one more stroke myself, I was going to die, and it felt good to put it out. And that's how I want every woman's sex to be. So until a woman hits that stage, then we don't like begin to introduce these higher level practices. But yeah, we go all the way into deep, deep, deep practices of intercourse and slow oral and stroking.
But is that in the book?
It's yes.
Where is that part? I missed that part.
I think it's called Slow Sex Meet Regular Sex.
Oh, well, I'm seeing this one thing here, which is the 4-month orgasm. you have to explain that to us. People are probably like thinking, "Oh my God, it's going to be like Sting or something." You know, so you just sit in the yab yum position, orgasming for.
I know, it's funny, you know, and then it's funny because people also read it and they're like, "She's such an idealist." And the truth of the matter is, my experience is that we are orgasmic. We just are, and the only reason that we don't know that, and the only reason that we don't experience it on a regular basis, is that we have spent so much time clamping it down, and we have so many inaccurate ideas that actually blocks the sensation in our body. You know, there's a baby, and you touch the baby's hand, and the baby's foot begins to move. The whole body is connected. You know, and then progressively, those connections begin to be cut off. And I think, you know, it sounds so like, and I'm not talking about climactic. I'm not like, you aren't like walking around trembling or anything, but it can be that your genitals are turned on to the point that, you know, you're walking around, you take your pants off, lie down with your partner, they put your finger down on your clitoris, and all of the contractions start, all of the ejaculate starts, like, immediately, because that area is open. You know, as we were talking about, you've purified that area out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all of those blocks have been moved out.
It's, I think, you know, it can translate to being full of life and joy and creativity,
right.
Really, really being aware and enlivened in ways that are sometimes very taboo for our culture. Just, and I think maybe this is one of the reasons sex has been such a taboo topic, is because it's so connected to our voice and our passion and our creativity.
Yeah, well, I think it's, I mean, I don't want to get woo-woo, but I think it's just connected to all things feminine.
Uh-huh.
And I think we are beginning to wake up that side of the world.
Mm-hmm. Starting to see that we need that for balance.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, you know, it's like a drink of water. Please give it to me at this point.
Absolutely. Now, some people might want to know how your work with oming, how that differs from Tantra. You know, they might be a little confused and think slow sex and oming sound a little tantric, and I'm just wondering how you distinguish.
Great. So, it's really easy to explain it in terms of Buddhism, because there's, you know, in Buddhism there's like sort of Tibetan Buddhism, which is very ornate, and there's robes and colors and brightness, and then there's Zen Buddhism, which is much more, it's like minimal and sparse and simple, so that, you know, deep things can arise from that simplicity. And so to my mind, you know, Tantra has that much more ornate aspect to it. You add in deities and Shiva and Shakti and positions, and it's, you know, very elaborate. And this is just very simple. It's just a stroke, up, down, up, down, up, down.
Okay. Very interesting. So, returning to our original question here, for the person who is maybe starting to feel just a little bit overwhelmed by this whole thing. What's the easy first few steps of entering the world of slow sex? Maybe something, I noticed in your book you talk about maintaining your quote-unquote regular sex so that you don't have to, like, change all of that.
Right.
You know, we've talked about some things here that might be kind of intimidating, like doing without intercourse for 2 years. Surely,
right,
that's not exactly what you're teaching in the book. So can you give us kind of like the little beginners, you know, a rundown so that people maybe will feel like it's something doable.
Right. Well, I, you know, often I say, like, I went out and did the research so you don't have to. Like, you can just do the really things in your everyday life. So, I mean, like, it's funny. I would start at the, like, simplest place, and that's tell the truth about something to your partner.
Like, about anything.
Doesn't even have to be about sex. It doesn't even have to be about sex. Just some truth, something that, you know, that you feel, and then that telling might make you just a little bit more vulnerable and open you up just a little bit. Like, so many, I get couples, I have a couple who, they've been married for 28 years and haven't touched each other for 18. So I'm not going to tell them to, you know, rush into the bedroom and begin stroking away. It's being willing to, you know, like, melt the ice. And the truth is, you know, the initial form of melting that ice between partners. And then, you know, I think it's a big deal for a woman to admit to herself and to her partner that her orgasm, or whatever she wants to call it, her sexuality, that it matters. Like, just doing that, you know, I do a lot of coaching, right? And so a woman will admit that, and I don't, you know, basically prescribe anything for a month after that and just let her sit in that admission, because it's so powerful. She spent a whole lifetime trying to deny it.
You actually say communication is a cornerstone of oming. I guess that the two major tenets of that being that you are speaking about your sensations, and you're also giving yes and communications. What's a yes and communication?
So as a woman, I know that I was taught I was taught sort of like my power is in my ability to subtly criticize. he'll do something for me, and I'm taught that I can get more if I say yes, but. Like, oh, honey, that's great, but I wish you would have also gotten me this. And what we don't realize is that kills our orgasm. That actually has the butt. Like, every time you say butt, it actually has your body shut down a little bit. What I studied was semantics. So in terms of semantics, what happens is you negate everything that happens before a butt.
Yes. I hate the word.
Yeah.
one of my clients says, it's an and world whenever I talk to him. It's an and world. I go, yes, it is. It's an and world.
Yeah. And well, butt kills sensation. So, but it's funny, as people begin, you know, I do these funny little exercises where I have people notice anytime they use butt and start using and. This is just one little way in your life to build sensation. And one of the things that happens is it becomes too sensational for them to use the word and. Because it just begins to build and build and build possibility.
Right.
So.
Too inclusive, huh?
Yep. Yeah, and it forces you to expand and change.
What do you think that is about, Nicole? It does seem that human beings have a tendency to want to avoid being awake and aware.
Yeah. I think that's the human condition. I think that's what's so cool. You know, we have like these drives toward homeostasis, and then we have these desires toward something bigger. And it's that constant, living in that constant dynamic tension is, you know, is like what it's about. So, you know, I think you can either be, you know, tortured by it, or it can be really fun and really interesting figuring out how to stretch these things constantly.
And push up against our own resistance to change.
Yeah. You know, and to recognize, you know, change actually occurs in the brain as pain. So it's not for no reason.
Well, avoiding change because it actually does hurt a little bit. Speaking of pain, on page 106, you say, go get a bikini wax. I thought I'd center in on something kind of humorous as we're bringing this hour to a close. Why get a bikini wax?
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't. It's not actually. It's like a one-time thing. Oh, you can get as many as you want, but it's only a one-time suggestion. That's because so many women come to me, and it's like, there's so much mystery around their genitals, and does it stink? Is it bad? Is it a big deal? You know, and they don't want to show it to their partner. No, no, no. They don't even want to look at it. Nothing. And, you know, and it's sort of like, you know, just go get a bikini wax and see how interested your bikini waxer is. It's going to be just another one of those things. It's not a big a deal. And, you know, just to take some of the pressure off is the basic idea.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of a corollary to Betty Dodson's get a hand mirror and look at yourself.
Right, yeah. It's our more painful corollary.
Yeah, more painful for sure. Yeah. But, you know, I think when you start paying that kind of attention to that part of your anatomy, it does show a certain level of self-care and sometimes you can actually develop an erotic connection with that. You know, you could say, oh, wow, I look pretty hot.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. This hour has flown by. We've got a couple minutes left here, and I just want to give you a chance to tell my listeners where they can get a copy of your book, Slow Sex, and also a little bit about your online presence and how they can become part of the One Taste I don't know if you would call it a family membership or fun.
Yeah, the One Taste Fun. I like that. Yeah.
Okay.
So the easiest way is to go on onetaste.us, and we have everything. We have a 6-week course online. We have downloadable audio and video, and how to get. You can get online coaching or in-person coaching. So there's so much available. Everything is basically on the site. And then the book is on Amazon now, Slow Sex, The Art and Craft of the Female Orgasm by me. And, that's the best way to connect in.
Slow Sex. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Slow Sex. And, wow. The website has changed it big. Time.
I'm telling you, huh?
Yeah. You've got articles and quizzes and I guess it looks like one can become a member too.
I wanted it to be as low a barrier to entry as possible.
Hmm.
So that every woman, you know, can, like, it's so scary to enter that kind of world, so she could have as much information as she wanted.
And is it mostly for women?
Well, actually, it's funny. If I say it's for women, the women invariably bring men. But if I say, oh, it's just value neutral, then it ends up oddly being 100% men.
Oh. You know, that reminds me of some of my men-only workshops. Can't keep those women out of them, I'm telling you.
I'm telling you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you, Nicole, so much. I really enjoyed catching up with you. It's been a while since we've seen each other. And your book is gorgeous. It's beautiful. I've got it posted on my Facebook page. So, and I wish you the best. I don't think you're going to need any luck here. It looks like you're well on your way to being quite successful at this book. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So once again, listeners, this was Nicole Davin, and she's authored a brand new book called Slow Sex. You want to get your copy on Amazon, and you can also go over to www.onetaste.us and sign up there. It's got some really cool stuff going on over there, all kinds of articles about sex. Thanks, Nicole. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak memutuskan berita?